The Supreme Court on Tuesday is set to hear arguments over the Trump administration's plan to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census, a move that has sparked outcry from Democrats and legal battles throughout the U.S. court system. Critics say adding the question would dissuade immigrants from filling out the census form.
Shares in Thomas Cook, the oldest tour operator in the world, surged over 15% on Tuesday, after reports the British company has received approaches about a takeover of its tour operating unit or the entire company. Sky News said US private equity firm KKR & Co. and Swedish buyout group EQT Partners were possible bidders.
Twitter's attempts to clean up its act appears to be paying off. The social media company Tuesday not only posted a surprise pickup in monthly active users, it also boasted better than expected quarterly sales. Monthly active users jumped to 330 million.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's April 24th, 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. Lots going on this morning around the world of business. We'll get to some of the numbers from the markets both here in the United States and around the world momentarily. And on the program today, we're going to be talking a little bit about older Americans in the workforce. 20% of workers are over retirement age in the workforce right now. There's a new report on this. Elizabeth Kelly will join us from United Income in our first segment this morning. A little bit later this morning at about 5:38, Brent Skorup will be with us, senior research fellow focusing on telecommunications, transportation, technology regulation, and wireless policy. There was a big report yesterday from the FAA approving drone deliveries for Google, giving them pretty much the same status as a small airline company. 5:38 is when we'll have that conversation this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the hour this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after the NASDAQ and S&P both closed out yesterday at all-time highs due to strong corporate earnings. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow had gained 145 points. The NASDAQ was up 106. The S&P rose about 26. 2934 was where the S&P ended the day yesterday. As we look at the markets this morning, futures are flat to positive. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up just a fraction. In Europe, markets are mixed with the numbers in London lower by about a third, in Germany higher, in France lower, and in Asia, markets are generally mixed as well. The Nikkei ending the day down nearly a quarter of a percent, down 59, almost 60 points. The Hang Seng down nearly 157 points, which is more than a half a percent. And oil in the U.S. is at $66.09 a barrel, which is down about 21 cents. You heard in the opening montage the arguments yesterday in front of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, over the census question on citizenship. Arguments took place yesterday morning, and the consensus from the reporters gathered in the room was that the conservative justices seem as though they're going to fall on the side of the Census Department on this and perhaps allow the question on citizenship to be added to the 2020 census. That would have major impact on the count of terms of population from immigrants who may be in the country illegally, not taking part in that question, answering that question, or taking part in the census as a whole. And of course, those numbers impact all kinds of things, from the number of representatives in Congress to impacts on businesses and the economy as well. So we'll watch that as it unfolds in the coming weeks. A new Stanford University study says climate change is increasing global economic inequality. Over the last half century, the researchers found hotter, poorer countries have gotten even hotter and poorer, while cooler, wealthier countries have gotten richer. Tropical nations like India, Nigeria, and Brazil have suffered 25 to 30% declines in economic output, while cooler places like Norway and Canada are about a third more prosperous. The authors say the nations are hurt the most by climate change are those least responsible for it through the production of greenhouse gases. Chicago-based Boeing is telling some of its 737 MAX owners that it hopes to get Federal Aviation Administration approval for its software upgrade as early as the third week of May. Reuters is reporting the company is aiming for the worldwide grounding of those jets to begin ending in mid-July. Boeing has not yet officially submitted the new software package to the FAA for approval. Company officials provided the timeline in meetings with airline customers as they explained the upgraded software believed to have played a role in the crashes of two international flights that resulted in the deaths of nearly 350 people. Those crashes involving 737 MAXs happening about 5 months apart. Front and center this morning, let's talk about older Americans in the workforce. 20% of workers are over retirement age right now. Elizabeth Kelly is Senior Vice President of Operations at United Income. And United Income, as we look and talk with them, is an online investment management and financial planning company based in Washington, D.C. And they've put together a report on this. Elizabeth, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
The report is, the headline here that I mentioned as we lead into the segment is 20% of workers are over retirement age in the workforce. That feels like a lot of workers.
Right. So as you say, 20% of Americans who are age 65 plus, what we would typically consider retirement age, are either working or looking for work. This is double the percent amount that we saw in 1985, when only 10% of workers age 65 plus were either in the workforce or looking for work. And this is a 57-year high. It's the highest we've seen it in quite a while.
What was the precipice for doing this survey and trying to find these numbers, and why is this top-level number important?
Sure. So we, as you say, are a financial planning investment management firm. But we are focused primarily on individuals who are nearing or transitioning to retirement and trying to make sure that we can understand and respond to their needs. Also, our founder is a Brookings Fellow, and I come from the policy world, so we feel an obligation to contribute to the dialogue. I think why it's important is it speaks to the changing nature of retirement and the changing experience of older Americans. There's a couple of different drivers for why we think it's an all-time high of Americans 65 plus who are in the workforce. Some are positive, some are negative. Now, on the positive side, we're seeing improved health, which enables people to be working longer. 78% of people 65 plus describe their health as good or better. On the negative side, we're seeing increasing concern and anxiety about retirement security. We've switched from a largely defined benefit to defined contribution system in the years since that all-time low in 1985. And even for retirees who are fortunate to have enough money saved, we've seen in our research that they tend to prune their spending by 2% a year, because they just don't know how much they're going to need to live on, given expanding lifetimes.
And so the idea is, let me continue working as long as I possibly can and am healthy to try to build up that nest egg some more.
I think that's absolutely right. One of the conclusions we found, though, is that the people who are able to and are working longer, that increase is concentrated among people who are better educated and with higher income. They're the ones who are in jobs that are less physically demanding, oftentimes more knowledge-based, so have the opportunity to continue working past 65, even if they're the folks who, from a financial perspective, would least need to. So one of the things we found that people is with a college degree who are still working past age 65 have a medium net worth of $700,000, far beyond what your average American has saved.
And the wage part of this, too, is important as we sort of look at national statistics on wages and wage growth. The number of these older folks with college degrees, as you mentioned, in the workforce, they're making a pretty good salary when they are in the workforce doing the work that they're doing.
Exactly. And that makes a lot of sense. These are older individuals who have built up years of experience that are valued by employers, and the American 65 plus who are in the workforce disproportionately tend to be better educated and higher earnings. So it just makes sense that it aligns there, also making more money. We've seen an increase in the average real income of retirement age workers of 63% since 1985, from 48,000 to 78,000 this year.
How does that compare to, let's say, some workers who are below 65 who are doing maybe similar work?
So it's a bit of an apples and oranges comparison.
Okay.
In that, you know, workers who are below 65 have fewer years of experience, and ergo are paid based off that. But we did find that working Americans below 65 earn on average, you know, $55,000 in personal income, versus the $78,000 that retirement age Americans who are still working earn.
Elizabeth, you talked about this a little earlier. You touched on it, the financial, the retirement planning of some of the folks that we're talking about here. Based on the numbers, is there any difference or any advice in terms of changing the strategy or adjusting a strategy for some of these workers?
Sure. So a couple things I'd say. You know, first off, I think we know Americans need sort of more visibility into how much money they're going to need in retirement. There's a lot of confusion around that, which creates anxiety, and which we're trying to help solve. Unfortunately, I think we know one of the best ways to increase retirement preparedness is to continue working an extra year or two, which is why we've seen that labor force participation rate amongst Americans 65 plus is at an all-time high at 20%. I think it's also interesting that while you might anticipate that this is driven in part by an increase in part-time or volunteer work, you know, the share of older Americans in the workforce who are working full-time has actually risen dramatically since 1985. It's up at 57% right now, which speaks to this desire to continue earning that higher salary for as many years as you can before retiring, in order to just make sure you're prepared and you have the nest egg that you need, especially since you don't know how long you'll live.
Right, and there are some strategies, too, for older Americans for retirement. Put as much as you possibly can by law into a retirement account might be one piece of advice.
Absolutely. So we encourage our members to, you know, max out their 401ks, which is their workplace savings account. You're able to make what are called catch-up contributions later in your working years. Certainly encourage individuals to do that, as well as, you know, max out the traditional IRA, or if you're below the earnings threshold, max out those Roth IRAs as well. And, of course, people can save in a brokerage account. They can look at buying a lifetime income product like an annuity. There are lots of tax-preferred ways that can enable people to save more for retirement. We encourage our members to do that.
How does this picture that we've painted this morning change should the economy change? For instance, if a recession might be coming or a downturn of some sort, do these numbers change dramatically, in your opinion?
So I think it's a double-edged sword. Right now we have a very tight labor market, which obviously creates opportunities for Americans to continue in the workforce. The mandatory retirement age disappeared in 1986 with the Age Discrimination Employment Act, which is part of why we've seen this rise in LFPR amongst Americans 65 plus. But if there was sort of more unemployment, we could see people essentially being pushed out sooner, which could lower the number that we're seeing. However, most of the projections are that more Americans 65 plus will continue to remain in the workforce, regardless of what the economic outlook is. And that's in part because if the stock market takes a dive, obviously people are going to want to be adding more money to these retirement accounts because they're not getting the 6-7% returns that they might have planned for.
Yeah, and as we end here, let's do it on a positive note. Back to the health part of this story. The fact that the health of the workers that were surveyed here is good, or really good, that's a positive thing.
Absolutely. So as we said, 78% of Americans 65 plus describe their health as good or better. And they're saying that their health does not place limitations on the type of work that they're doing, which is great not only for their ability to participate in the labor market, but also for their ability to enjoy their retirement with grandchildren or travel, or whatever else they've mapped out for themselves.
Elizabeth, thank you for sharing this information with us this morning. We appreciate you being on with us.
Absolutely.
Elizabeth Kelly, Senior Vice President of Operations at United Income. We're going to link out to the report, and you can find more, too, online at unitedincome.com.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. The Federal Aviation Administration has given its first certification, air carrier certification, to Alphabet's Wing Aviation, allowing it to make commercial drone deliveries. It's a big step forward in the drone delivery space. And joining us this morning to talk a little bit about it, Brent Skorup, a senior research fellow at Mercatus Center at George Mason University, where he focuses on telecommunications, transportation, technology, regulation, and wireless policy, among other things. Brent, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a pretty exciting deal. That buzzing sound I think people might be hearing outside of their door could be one of these drones soon making a delivery. How big of a deal is this?
It's an exciting time for the aviation community and for those of us who study aviation transportation. As you said, the Google's Wing project, drone project, received certification to start delivering small products to people, and in the next few weeks they'll start delivering consumer products in Virginia, Southern Virginia, and expand from there.
What does the certification permit do? What is that? What's the process? How did we get to this point?
Yeah, it was interesting how this one came about. So this was on a separate path from drone certification, which is a new type of classification at the FAA. This drone project was certified as an air carrier. So this is identical to what small airlines are certified for. So it's a more rigorous process. There's safety requirements and training requirements, and apparently the Wing project did all the necessary requirements to be certified as an air carrier, so much like a small airline. And later this year, the FAA expects to have a separate drone certification, and not quite as rigorous as the air carrier, but in order to really jumpstart this industry, this drone delivery industry, which many nations have been doing.
Yeah, and successfully, too, some other countries have been testing this, and I know Alphabet's been doing it here and other places as well. Are they learning? What have they learned positively and negatively about drone deliveries as they've been doing these tests?
So Wing has been testing mostly in Australia for the last 5 years or so, and they're learning things about design of vehicles, what they should look like. Fixed wing or the kind of typical drone you see with the rotors, where to place batteries, that sort of thing. It seems like the industry, there's a question about whether this should be remote controlled or fixed route, and what most companies have established is that the fixed route just kind of set the route and have the drone do it autonomously. That seems to be the major way of doing it. And I'm sure they'll learn a lot more just about weather conditions, what these drones can handle, and their range and so forth. And they'll improve over time. Battery power is the big thing, and batteries are improving all the time, and they'll want to continue to update that so they can cover more people on one charge.
The Alphabet will tell you, too, that the drone delivery is going to help in a number of different ways. One of the big ways is to get things faster to people, but also to get things into places where, vehicles don't necessarily get to very quickly.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what you see, particularly in countries that don't have the developed infrastructure or rural areas, say in China, where there's been a lot of drone delivery going on the last few years. And so speed of delivery. So in theory, you could have, instead of doing a 40-minute round trip to the shopping center to pick up one item, you could have a drone delivery in 10 minutes, whatever that item was you needed. Or in many countries that are doing drone deliveries, it's medical equipment. So Switzerland, Rwanda is a big one, actually a tremendous amount of hospital blood is delivered via drone in Rwanda, and just with medical supplies, it's often very time sensitive. So, and also very valuable. So, medical supplies will probably be a major way for the drones to gain commercial adoption, and you're starting to see in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, and that was my next question. I know that I see the reading a Medium post by Alphabet and the Wing group that they put out. You see the pictures, some publicity photos of some smiling people coming out of their house, looking at the drone, dropping a package in their yard. My question is that the reaction that this is going to get from the public? Is the public ready for a drone coming to your front door and dropping a package?
Yes, I think so. I'm just based on what other countries have seen, and it's been countries all over the world, in Africa, in Europe, in South America, and what you see is, at least initially, it's exciting, and kids are watching out the windows when the drone comes by, or hospital patients if it's medical delivery, but then after a few weeks, it kind of loses its luster and it just kind of blends into the background, and it's just people adapt. You know, it becomes just another way of receiving deliveries, and it's an exciting time right now, and it will be for a while. But I expect in the future, especially, they prioritize getting noise low so that this is not a disturbance to people. And I expect in the future it'll just blend in with everyday life.
Yeah, the noise issue is going to be one of them. What other regulation type things that you might see from the federal government, will they be watching closely, or do you think issues might come up?
So there are some interesting legal and policy issues because traditionally aviation has been an almost exclusively federal job. With when you have drones, when you have small drones are flying around at very low altitudes, maybe 50, 100 feet above homes, you'll see an interesting split on what's the state and city responsibility and what's the FAA's responsibility, because there would be whole new issues that the FAA has never dealt with before, noise complaints, packages, dropping in the wrong yard or on the sidewalk or whatever. So I know federal lawmakers and state lawmakers are thinking about this, just in what ways do aviation regulations need to change? Do states need a bigger role, and what should that role look like outside of zoning and placement of these drone delivery centers?
Yeah, and then watch this space, too, for other companies. I think we're all thinking about Amazon and obviously UPS probably going to get involved in this, but the number of companies that will join the drone delivery space is probably going to increase exponentially as well.
Yeah, that's right. There are many companies looking at getting in this area and other technologies. There's talk about, like, freight blimps and flying cars and all these other things taken to the sky in the next decade. And it's an exciting time for aviation policy.
It is, absolutely. Brent, we appreciate you joining us this morning. I understand you have some ties to the Chicago area, so it's nice talking with somebody with Chicago ties.
Yeah, it's great to speak on WGN, from outside Chicago.
Very nice. Please come back and join us sometime. Brent Skorup with us this morning from Mercatus Center at George Mason University, where he's a senior research fellow there in areas of telecommunication, transportation, technology regulation, and wireless policy. Of course, you can find the Mercatus Center online at mercatus.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat to positive open on Wall Street. Down NASDAQ, S&P futures up just fractionally this morning, heading to the opening bell. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday in the grain market, not a good day, especially for soybeans. Soybeans hit multi-month lows on concern over lack of demand. And corn sagged as well. Wheat steadied just a little bit in the market trade yesterday. Taking a quick look at some of those closing prices, the wheat market gained 2 cents a bushel. The corn market dropped 3¾ cents. Soybeans, the big loser, down 15¼ cents yesterday. Turning to the livestock trade, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, hog futures sagged on profit-taking. Live cattle futures also slumped at the Merc yesterday, and it was an all-red screen at the end of the day. The June lean hog contract down $1.45 a hundredweight, June live cattle down 57 cents, and May feeder cattle down $1.35. A lawsuit filed in Chicago federal court yesterday charging Tyson Foods, Cargill, JBS USA, and the National Beef Packing Company of colluding since January 2015 to suppress the price of fed cattle. That lawsuit filed by RCAF, if you want the full title, it's the Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund, United Stock Growers of America, and it resembles litigation in the same court in which companies, including Tyson and JBS, have been accused of conspiring to fix prices of broiler chickens and pork. Tyson said the lawsuit is baseless. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Have a great day as well. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. T-Mobile introducing a mobile checking account that offers a 4% interest rate. The higher rate equates to an extra $120 a year return on $3,000 spent using the account. The industry average interest rate on balances is typically around 0.06%. Banking customers also must deposit at least $200 into the account every month to get that 4% rate. Walgreens is raising the age of tobacco sales to 21. Drugstore chain says the policy change will kick in September at its more than 9,500 stores nationwide. Last month, the Food and Drug Administration listed Walgreens among the top violators for selling tobacco products to minors. Move comes as the Senate prepares to roll out legislation to raise the minimum age to buy cigarettes from 18 to 21 nationally. Illinois has already done that. Snapchat is off to a fast start in 2019. The multimedia messaging app announced yesterday that it added 4 million daily users as the company reported better than expected first quarter revenue of $320 million. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Wednesday, April 24th. The weekly look at mortgage rates is due out today. Industry analysts hoping for a recovery after last week's report showed a 3.5% decline in loan applications. Also today, the State Street Investor Confidence Index, the EIA Petroleum Status Report, and on the earnings calendar, a busy day today. We'll get earnings from Anthem, AT&T, Boston Scientific, Illinois-based Caterpillar, Domino's Pizza, SAP SE, SAP SE, and also SiriusXM, T. Rowe Price, Tupperware, Chipotle, Fidelity National, Microsoft, and Boeing, all reporting earnings. Quarterly earnings today. Lots of things to move the markets on this Wednesday, April the 24th.